This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. From providing workplace solutions to nearly 1 million federal employees, to creating and developing the award-winning USA.gov portal, the United States General Services Administration seeks to help make government work better. To accomplish this mission effectively and efficiently requires a focused information technology strategy, one that leverages advances in technology while working to improve quality IT services. What is GSA's information technology strategy? How is GSA modernizing its IT infrastructure and ensuring its IT investments align with its overall mission? How is GSA providing balanced stewardship between information and technology? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Casey Coleman, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. General Services Administration. Casey, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher. Ken, welcome.
Thanks.
Casey, before I delve into the specifics of your role at GSA, could you give us a little bit of the history and mission of GSA?
Yes, GSA was founded in 1949. We just celebrated our 60th anniversary last year when President Truman signed the act that created GSA and with the intention of streamlining the administrative functions of government. So we've been around for a while.
So with that important mission, can you give us a sense of the operational size of GSA? How is it organized, the budget, number of full-time employees?
Yes, GSA has about 13,000 employees. We have a budget of about $26 billion a year, and we are located all across the country. We have offices and regional headquarters at 11 different cities around the country. A lot of field operations, because one of our big functions is the management of the buildings of the federal government, the Public Building Service, and so we have folks in large and small buildings all across the country where there is a federal presence.
With that mission, and it's an important government-wide mission, could you tell us a little bit about your role as the Chief Information Officer at GSA?
Yes. At GSA, our IT systems have an annual budget of about $650 million. My office, the Office of the Chief Information Officer, is responsible for about a third of that directly and indirectly responsible for the rest of it because I'm in charge of the overriding policy, architecture, information security functions that apply to all the other IT functions where the business systems reside. My office is also responsible for the actual operation of the combined infrastructure of GSA. About 4 years ago, we took 39 contracts and 15 help desks, consolidated that into one single program that's operated nationwide with all the common services put together. So things like the help desk, the management of laptops and Blackberries, the local break-fix support, support for email and collaboration functions, those things which are common across the agency are managed out of my office. It's a pretty big function.
Regarding your responsibilities and duties, what are the three top challenges that you currently face in your position, and how are you addressing those challenges?
Well, broadly speaking, I would say the three are really modernization, innovation, and communications. And by modernization, I'm referring to our legacy portfolio of capabilities. Like most agencies, like most big organizations, most of the money GSA spends on technology goes to the support of ongoing systems that are already in operation, operations and maintenance. In fact, that's about 83% of our budget. We would really like to move the needle to support more innovative investments. We'd like to move that to one of our long-term goals, in fact, is to move that more to a balance of 60-40. So in order to do that, we have to modernize those legacy investments, free up the dollars that were previously being devoted to those, put more into innovative new capabilities. So modernization and innovation really go together. When I talk about innovation, I'm talking about really supporting the strategic priorities of the agency and the Obama administration, things that have to do with sustainability. Our administrator, Martha Johnson, has challenged the agency to work towards, to strive towards what we call our moonshot, which is a zero environmental footprint. The notion being that GSA could demonstrate leadership for how the government could achieve zero net carbon emissions. I have a lot of strategies, a lot of projects in support of that. And of course, in order to make those types of strategies successful, you really have to communicate effectively. And we've got busy stakeholders who are responsible for a great many other priorities. So you have to break through and make your message very clear.
Before we continue, let's just take a quick step back. Could you describe your career path for our listeners and how you began your career? And really, for me, what inspired you in public service? Was it your work during the Gulf War? And what inspires you now?
I believe I must have taken a slightly unusual path into federal service because I started off in private sector work. I was with Lockheed Martin. At the time, it was a different division than Lockheed has now acquired. It was LTV Missiles and Electronics. And so I did development on systems that were used in the Gulf War. And at one point in my career, early on, I had the opportunity to move from Dallas, where I'm from, to Washington, D.C. in the mid-90s to work for a year as a legislative fellow. So I had the chance to work on the legislative side of things as a fellow with an engineering society, the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. So sort of a scientific rotational assignment that gives you the opportunity to be exposed to the legislative branch and to offer some scientific expertise. And that really opened my eyes to how diverse and interesting and cosmopolitan and really exciting a place Washington is. After that year was up, I moved back to Dallas. And this was in the mid-90s. And the Netscape had just gone public and the internet explosion was upon us. And so I left Lockheed Martin and was then with a series of technology startups. So I had large business experience, legislative branch experience, and then small business experience with a series of companies that went on to become divisions of other larger companies and sort of the consolidation phase that followed. But after 9/11, I really wanted to move back to Washington. I wanted to return to public service and the executive branch side, and I wanted to give back. I wanted to be involved in a mission of service to the country. That was really a motivational moment for me, and I found my way back to GSA, where I have been for the last 8.5 years.
Right. First FAS, and now...
Yes, actually, first the Office of Citizen Services. That was my first role, and that was a new office at the time. It was a real challenge and a very interesting assignment because, unlike most of GSA, which is fee for service and dedicated to serving other agencies with business support services, the Office of Citizen Services, as you know, because Dave McClure was recently a guest on the show, is really devoted to service to the citizens, service to the public. And so we did some things then that are still part of their mission today that I think are very worthwhile, very motivational opportunity.
Well, Casey, you pick up on the fact that GSA's mission is government-wide. Mm-hmm. Does your office, the Office of Chief Information Officer, Is it involved in government-wide initiatives outside of GSA?
Not as deeply as, for example, the Office of Citizen Service or Federal Acquisition Service, Public Building Service. But we do get involved in some fashion. So, for example, GSA has always had perhaps little-known mission to support small boards and commissions and small agencies that themselves don't have the support infrastructure to conduct full administrative support functions. So we do provide some, email support services and some internet connectivity, but in a very small sort of fashion for those very small organizations. I would also point to our involvement on the Federal CIO Council, and I sit on the Federal CIO Council and have had leadership opportunities there. So there's a chance to shape government-wide technology strategies.
So given your wealth of experience, what makes an effective leader?
I don't think it matters what industry you're in. I don't think it matters what functional specialty you're in. I think it really is always about building relationships, developing credibility, delivering results, communicating in a way that matters to people, not just about what it is we're trying to accomplish, but why it matters to our partners and stakeholders, and what is the relevant message that is going to communicate to them in a way that resonates.
Who's influenced your leadership style and management approach?
I've benefited from the leadership of so many different people. It's hard to single out just one, and I've learned from some great mentors. It's funny, but I've had three bosses by the name of Jim Williams, and all three of them have been great mentors to me. The first was Jim Williams at Lockheed Martin, who encouraged me to take that fellowship in Washington, D.C. for the first time. The second was Jim Williams, who was with the Federal Technology Service. And the third was former Federal Acquisition Service Commissioner Jim Williams, who recently retired. All three great role models and leaders.
Do you think in an increasingly interconnected and networked world that the concept of leadership needs to change to adopt to that?
I think some of the practices of leadership might change. Some of the mechanisms and tools. Again, I think leadership is timeless. But approaches such as collaboration, the ability to use new technologies adeptly, the ability to speak multi-generationally, those I think are new practices that we need to be fluent in.
What about GSA's efforts to enhance its IT governance? We will ask Casey Coleman, CIO at GSA, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? What are federal agencies doing to be more transparent, participatory, and innovative? How is the Navy strengthening its information dominance for the 21st century? What is the U.S. Postal Service doing to reduce its carbon footprint and green its operations? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. From contaminated peanut butter to spinach, our food safety net has shown signs of fraying, with tainted products slipping through to retail shelves, causing human harm and economic ruin. Pick up the latest Center report on food safety and find out how critical private-public partnerships are enhancing the current food safety system in America. You can order or download a free copy of this and all of our reports at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Casey Coleman, Chief Information Officer of the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us today from IBM is Ken Beecher. And Casey, would you tell us more about GSA's IT strategy and the overarching strategic goals that support your mission?
As I mentioned a moment ago, we're really focused on modernizing our IT infrastructure and being able to deliver more innovative capabilities. That is aligned with GSA's overriding strategic goals. I mentioned sustainability. Another has to do with innovation, operational excellence, and customer intimacy. So sort of a triad of priorities that relate to all aspects of our mission. We are in pursuit of an IT modernization strategy that really began about a year ago. I would say it was founded upon our infrastructure consolidation that I mentioned a moment ago, because until we had a consolidated infrastructure, we didn't know what we had in our inventory. We didn't know what was patched. We didn't know what was out of warranty. We didn't know what we were being charged for and not even using. Once we finished that and got our arms around that, we were able to think about not just consolidating and gaining efficiencies, but really modernizing and moving forward. So a little over a year ago, we commissioned a study to understand what were the issues? Where did we need to go? How are we going to be there when the business of GSA needed us to be ready in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? And out of that, we created a modernization plan that had a number of key initiatives that were really foundational to being able to recognize that innovation goal and some of those other priorities. When Administrator Martha Johnson arrived, we began a conversation about those priorities, and she's a great advocate for the role of technology as a strategic enabler and really very visionary, very progressive in her view of how technology creates an ability to be agile, be innovative. She jumped on that and, in fact, challenged us to take the first set of five projects, which we proposed to be, you know, phase one of our modernization strategy, which were really scheduled to occur over a series of about 18 months. And I still remember the day, it was in March of this year, when she said, well, why don't you get those done by July 4th? And I said, of 2010? Yeah. And she said, yes. And, of course, we went back and huddled and came to the conclusion that we were going to do it. And we really proceeded in a way that I think is a little bit innovative, a little bit novel, and it was at Administrator Johnson's urging us to really bring everyone into the room who had a part to play in getting those first five projects done. So, for example, we needed help from procurement to get some engineering help to speed up the work. We needed help from the finance division to accelerate some of the funding on these projects. We needed help from the Public Building Service to do some renovations in some of our buildings to support some higher demand electrical and internet connectivity wiring. And we brought everyone together in April of this year and had a one-day SLAM. And SLAM is not an acronym for anything. It really is just the notion of slamming the project into submission and bringing everyone together to get agreement on what has to be done and everyone's role. And everyone signed agreements, actually. We had big cardboard agreements that everyone committed jointly, every part of the agency, to their role. We left there with an agreement on how we were going to get those five projects done. And we implemented voice over IP phones. We implemented two-factor authentication with the use of the GSA access card to log into the network, forming a foundation for us then to be able to do single sign-on after we integrate the applications into that same infrastructure. We migrated from Microsoft Office 2003 to 2007. I realize we're a few years behind the curve there, but we really had a lot of old applications that still depended on Microsoft Office 2003. And so we had to upgrade all of those legacy systems with those plugins. We also vastly increased our remote access capability. You remember back in February of this year, we had the snowpocalypse or snowmageddon, whatever you may want to call it, that kept the government shut down for about 5 days. GSA was able to really telework pretty effectively during that time. We had about 60% of those employees in the affected area teleworking. But what we learned from that is that the ability to support that was fairly manual on our part, and we needed to really increase the robustness and the availability of those remote access connections to support telework on a broad scale and to a much higher degree. The last of our five initiatives was a part of our migration to the networks contract for telecommunications. It was moving both to a new contract and migrating our data network to the MPLS protocol so that we could take advantage of much higher bandwidth and really start to begin our journey to converge voice, data, and video onto a common network and have a lot more advanced capabilities that come with MPLS. So we did all that in about 10 weeks, and we finished on July 2nd. July 4th was actually a Sunday, so I'll say we finished early, but we did finish on the Friday of that week. And so we declared success on that first phase, and now we've moved on into follow-on efforts.
Well, that's a great segue into the next question, because you've mentioned that IT is a strategic enabler. And you also mentioned that in order to get those major projects done, you needed to bring people together. So the question I have is, how do you foster an enterprise view of IT, and how do you break down some of those silos that hamstring you from old legacy systems?
Part of it is leadership, and by leadership, I mean not just leadership from the IT executives, but also from the senior executives across the agency. Starting to really tie it to the business case and starting to demonstrate what could be with the more enterprise approach. And in building our IT modernization roadmap, one of the themes that came out over and over again is a need for better analytics and the ability to understand the state of our business and the ability to really manage our business in a much more agile fashion. And when you start to communicate the fact that this is currently not as feasible as we would like because of the fact that our legacy systems actually inhibit that kind of agile, modern approach to management, then the light bulbs come on and you start to see a spirit of partnership emerge with the executives who need to be supportive of that.
Casey, you know, one way to mitigate complexity and challenge, especially in light of this agile environment, is to have a strong IT governance. Can you elaborate on your efforts to enhance IT governance within GSA?
Governance is really all about decision making and not just making decisions, but sticking to them. About 2.5 years ago, shortly after I took on this role at GSA, I asked my team to relook at our governance structure because I felt like it was one that was more structured for information sharing than decision making. And we did that and restructured the IT governance so that what had been one large information sharing meeting of the IT leadership of about 40 people was broken up into work groups that had responsibility for architecture, for security, for capital planning, investment control, and so forth. And each of those work groups had the subject matter experts who really were responsible for doing the work, for conducting the analysis, making the recommendations. And then we shrank the IT executive committee to only the 8 executives, and it is now executive only, it's principals only, who had a portfolio that they were responsible for managing. So it really is those folks who really have the accountability who are now charged with the decision making. And then there is an executive group above that, which is the senior team, those who report to Administrator Johnson. I'm a member of that group as well. And that's really our executive governance. It really has been separated between, you know, the individual contributors, the subject matter experts, and then the decision-making 2 tiers above that.
Given your perspective, why do many government IT projects go over budget, miss deadlines, and not achieve stated outcomes?
I think the way our projects are funded makes it difficult to do long-range planning because in some cases the funding is made available at a point where it has to be executed very quickly within the course of that year. And then the subsequent year's funding might be delayed if there's a continuing resolution. It's less the case at GSA where more of our budget is working capital fund, revolving fund because of our fee-for-service nature. But that's not to say we're immune from those challenges because we're part of the overall government structure that is really funded on an annual basis.
So given that GSA has this responsibility to be a good steward of public funds and invest its budget wisely, would you elaborate on how you have strengthened your agency's IT capital investment process?
We've tried to really tie the capital planning much more closely to the overall agency strategic planning process. In previous years, those were really separate processes. You would have the programs and the mission arms of the agency conducting their strategic planning with their strategic initiatives and goals and outcomes and performance measures. And separately, we would be calculating what are the needed investments for the IT portfolio for the year. Now, it wasn't totally divorced, but it really wasn't integrated very effectively. So in the past couple of years, we've tried to not only integrate it in terms of timing, but also in terms of documentation, so people aren't preparing 2 sets of documents, one for the strategic planning side, one for the capital planning side. We've tried to reduce the amount of work that people have to perform in order to get a better integrated product.
Casey, we've talked about why IT projects may fail. And I've had Rich Spires on, who's the CIO at DHS and also has a role within the CIO Council of Best Practices. And really what I'd like to delve into is what are you doing around project management practices and strengthening them and instantiating them into GSA?
That's a challenging subject because I think I've heard this from other agencies as well. We need to be careful that we retain enough subject matter expertise within our federal employee ranks that we can adequately provide oversight and project management of these initiatives. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, whoever the industry partner is, the government owns the outcome. And we have to be certain that we can provide appropriate management all along the way. So we've tried to really invest in project management training for our IT professionals. We have a certification course that is fairly rigorous, and almost everyone in the IT ranks will go through it at one point or another. We are also moving more in the direction of a PMO, a program management office structure, to look at across the portfolio at all of our projects and to start to do resource and budget balancing across them all and start to make sure that the dependencies are being recognized. Because it's not just a matter of executing on one project, it's a matter of executing on the whole program. And they're so interrelated in terms of, I'll give you an example, in order to deploy voice over IP, which is, you know, moving our voice traffic to the IP data network, we need to make sure that our network has sufficient bandwidth to be able to support that extra traffic load. So there's a dependency there that we have to make sure we account for and sequence properly in order to deliver a successful outcome. So that PMO approach is something we think holds a lot of promise, and we're moving in that direction.
Shifting gears slightly, something you talked about earlier is going green. And the federal government is taking green computing seriously, and both the private sector and federal agencies are pursuing green solutions. There are many opportunities to use IT in meeting this challenge. Would you elaborate on your efforts to be good environmental stewards and move towards green computing?
I think it's an interesting way to look at it. We have been conducting some research, and you know, there's the data center side of things, which is a big target of opportunity. But then there's also the end user devices and peripherals, which is another equally large target of opportunity. We are on the data center side participating in the Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative, looking to reduce our overall data center footprint and to move into more modern facilities, because it's not just a matter of reducing the number of servers, but also employing techniques such as hot and cool aisles and modernizing with virtualization, using different techniques so that you don't have to keep the entire data center cooled at, you know, 50 degrees. And on the peripheral side of things, we are moving into the direction of energy management so that we're actually turning off computers at midnight or at some, you know, point in the evening when they're no longer being used, turning them off on weekends. We're also communicating that to our employee base and challenging them to start to, for example, rely more on shared multifunction devices and less on a printer on every desk, because a printer on your desk will be used only a few minutes every day on average, but it's consuming electricity every single moment. And so the ROI on that's not that good from a green perspective. I would say, however, that all of this that I've talked about is really about employing green IT. And we think there's a much larger case to be made in the notion of IT for green. And that is to employ IT systems in pursuit of a broader green strategy. And things in that area would include smart buildings. So managing the utilities, the heating and air conditioning and the various utilities in a building with sensors, with IP-based sensors that are on the network that can allow you to really optimize it for the tenants in that building and really not overuse utilities in a sort of one-size-fits-all approach.
So telework or telecommuting, which you mentioned earlier, it has a green aspect
to
it.
Oh, you bet.
And it also is a major priority for GSA. So what more needs to be done, and how are you facilitating the government-wide telework initiative?
We are looking to really be a thought leader and show what can be done with teleworking. And in fact, we're really starting to think about it more as a mobile work strategy, because it's not just a matter of working from a home office or a telework center on an intermittent basis. It's really about being able to reach all of your critical business systems anytime, anywhere, from any device. That is our ultimate strategy. So right now, about 46% of GSA's employees telework on a regular basis, but that might mean one day a week. We think there's a case to be made to telework more frequently, 2 or 3 days a week in some cases where appropriate, and start to experience a lot more of the green benefits and you know, employee benefits as well, work-life balance and so forth. Some of the strategies that we're employing to support broader telework include the projects we've already employed, the increasing our remote access. We now have 5 times the VPN capability that we had prior to the SLAM initiatives. But we're also moving in the direction of server virtualization and desktop virtualization. When you start to work remotely, people start to ask for lighter weight laptops, or they start to ask for tablet computers or netbooks, things that really make it easy to work from anywhere without carrying a heavy device all the time. So if you have a more diverse set of endpoints, you really need to carefully consider the data that's resident on those systems and try to move it more into a virtualized environment so that you're not increasing your risk and your security vulnerability while you're making the situation more productive for employees.
So speaking of employees, how do you empower your employees?
We are a very, I think, empowered bunch because we're spread out all across the country. The OCIO team is about 235 people in all of the offices of GSA. So we have project managers who are all over the country managing national projects. We use a lot of video conferencing to stay on top of those projects, but it gives people who are perhaps previously would have been individual contributors or subject matter experts in a local office now the chance to manage a national project, maybe have opportunity to participate in developmental and leadership opportunities that would give them an advancement path that they didn't have in the past. So that's resulted in a lot of folks now having been promoted into positions of more responsibility where in the past that wouldn't have been available to them. I also have a blog that I use for communicating internally to our own team where I really try to break down the communications barriers and not depend on someone telling someone else the message that I'm trying to communicate, but really to speak directly to each member of the team and to give them a chance to have a conversation among themselves and with me directly and break down those traditional sort of chain of command issues.
How is GSA pursuing data center consolidation and leveraging technology innovation? We will ask Casey Coleman, Chief Information Officer at GSA, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Navy doing to strengthen its information dominance for the 21st century? What are federal agencies doing to be more transparent, participatory, and innovative? And how are federal agencies leveraging technology to improve mission effectiveness? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. The Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine provides insights from those who lead. Hear from Richard Spires, leading Homeland Security's technology effort, Dr. Bobby Braun, advancing NASA's space technology program, Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett, strengthening the U.S. Navy's information dominance, and Sam Paul Crano, coordinating U.S. Postal Service sustainability efforts. All of this and so much more in the Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Casey Coleman, Chief Information Officer of the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us today from IBM is Ken Beecher. Casey, given your efforts around infrastructure modernization, would you elaborate on your data center consolidation efforts? What are the benefits of pursuing data center consolidation, and what are some of the challenges you're experiencing?
We are looking to pursue a data center consolidation strategy that looks first at our government-owned, government-operated computing facilities, and then subsequently looks at those data centers where we have industry partnerships who are providing that on an outsourced basis, because it's more likely that those industry-provided data centers would have already gone through some optimization, and there's really a lot of opportunity, target of opportunity within GSA's own government-owned, government-operated computing rooms, computing facilities. So we're doing some consolidation. We're doing some virtualization, doing a lot of server virtualization. GSA itself is not an agency that has an enormous data center population or data center footprint. So for us, it's really more about optimizing what we have than it is about foregoing any huge investment in the future by undergoing consolidation now.
Do you see any challenges from this virtualization, server virtualization? Are you experiencing any unsuspecting challenges that you hadn't anticipated in doing this?
We haven't really yet, but I believe as we get more into the virtualization of those servers that run our critical business applications, that we will have to proceed very, very carefully. So far, our virtualization efforts have been more about those commodity-type functions like file servers that are more static and lend themselves more to first round of virtualization.
Casey, you know, GSA and specifically your office is not short on priorities, especially with President Obama's administration.
No kidding.
We talked about green. We talked about data center consolidation. Let's talk a little bit about cloud computing. Would you tell us more about what the federal government's efforts to leverage cloud computing and what is your agency doing in this area?
GSA is really one of the leading agencies, I think, in terms of understanding and adopting cloud computing. We began our journey when the Obama administration identified cloud computing as a strategic priority, and that was shortly after the president took office. It was one of the first technology priorities to emerge, and joined in with other leaders on the CIO Council to create an executive steering committee and create a definition of cloud computing that really was led by NIST in partnership. And more recently, tackling those impediments to cloud computing, such as information security and the multi-tenant nature of cloud computing, creates some unique challenges in terms of information security. So the CIO Council and the Federal Cloud Program Office stood up the FedRAMP initiative, which is Federal Authorization and Risk Management Program, which is a joint certification and accreditation process that will allow us to jointly certify those common or shared cloud solutions that multiple agencies use. So rather than historically what has been the case, each agency would have undergone its own security process separately, verifying and validating the security protocols for the same solution that they're all receiving as a cloud solution over the internet, we can partner together and jointly approach that ideally once and benefit from the work that a dedicated team is able to do to secure those things in a way that benefits us all.
In the break, we were talking a little bit about IT as an enabler. What extent is software as a service being used as a key enabler of agility and potential cost savings in the federal government?
Software as a service is one of those things that's taking on life of its own, really is creeping up everywhere. And in some cases, not even from the agency's IT organization, but really from the program organization. So our goal is to get in front of that trend and to be able to deliver cloud solutions in a way that works for the agency. Email and collaboration is one that we will be announcing soon. We have currently an in-house email system that is not as resilient as we would like it to be in terms of the architecture. It's just the way we've set it up over the many years it's been in operation. By moving to a cloud provider, we expect to get a lot more resiliency, redundancy, continuity of operations, and I hope some economies of scale and efficiencies as well.
Casey, you've touched on IT security a little bit vis-a-vis cloud computing. I'd like to turn it a little bit around and talk about your efforts to combat cyber threats and cyber attacks on your systems. Can you give us a sense and describe for us what kind of cyber attacks you are experiencing? And what are you doing to ameliorate the effects of these attacks?
You know, the federal government is a target as really never before. I mean, we've always been a target, but the intensity, the frequency, and the sophistication of the attacks has really grown in the past 2 to 3 years. So we're a target just like every other agency is. And a lot of the strategies that we're employing in support of our mobility initiative are also intended to help improve our security. So two-factor authentication, the use of an access card to log into the network requiring not only a password but also something that you have, a token, a credential, a badge, is one of our tactics. Another is protecting the endpoints better with encryption and with the ability to remotely wipe or to remotely erase a device if it's lost or stolen. We also are employing defense in depth, multiple tiers of defenses so that if anything happens at one point, it's not able to contaminate the entire infrastructure. So we've changed the way we set up administrator passwords and administrator accounts to restrict them, for example, just to the server that they need to be working on and not to use ubiquitous usernames and passwords for any administrative account. Those are some of the strategies that we think are going to make our defenses more robust.
So if we can switch gears a little bit and talk about what you're doing to cultivate a culture of accountability for your employees that complements the cyber and IT security efforts, the defense in depth effort that you're doing. What are you doing around changing people's relationship to personal identifiable information or how they deal with that kind of information and being accountable in securing it?
You know, that's an ongoing challenge because really the ultimate point of defense is the employee, is the individual who has that information and needs to safeguard it. And we do have annual training. We have a pretty aggressive campaign to remind and inform people. And I would say it continues to be a challenge because people are busy and they have mission activities that they need to complete. So everyone, that we are all personally accountable for the safeguarding of the information that we have under our control.
May I ask a question that's a follow-on? It kind of ties together the movement to telework. What are the implications of telework and cultivating this culture of accountability? Do you think there's, by going to telework, we're compromising security at all?
We are vulnerable wherever we are. And I believe it is a misguided sense of security to feel as though when we're inside the corporate office or inside the agency walls that there's an improvement in the security posture. I really think that telework can be a helpful tool in reminding us all to be more vigilant. So it's an aid in cultivating that culture of accountability, because if we were to think that, you know, sitting at our desk, the vigilance can be relinquished, then that's a mistake.
You know, we're talking a lot about technology, and it seems to me that technology keeps moving faster and faster every day. Are federal policies keeping pace with the technology?
I believe policy will always lag behind the most advanced technology developments, just as a state of affairs, that you want your policy to be developed in such a way that it can stand the test of time, not forever, but it need not be changing daily or weekly the way technology is. So it needs to, in one sense, be a bit removed from the most advanced technology developments. We are, however, updating our policies as it becomes evident that there's a trend that has some traction and we need to pay attention to it. So, for example, social media is a priority at GSA. We do not block social media tools such as Facebook and Twitter. We believe there is value in being able to conduct a dialogue with our stakeholders in a public setting as appropriate. And as appropriate is the key phrase. So we have created a social media policy. We actually created it almost 2 years ago now, but that's a lifetime ago in social media terms. So we're in the process of updating it. The interesting thing about it has been, though, that we've all come to the conclusion that social media itself does not really introduce any new policy demands on the part of the agency or the employees. It really is a different communications channel under which all the old policies still apply.
Well, I know that you practice what you preach, especially with social media, and we're not going to go into the sites that you and I are both on. I know you've launched an external blog called Around the Corner that focuses on the theme of innovation. Why the title Around the Corner?
I once had a boss who encouraged me to always be thinking about what is around the corner, not just what's directly in front of you, what's visible, but be thinking about what are the possibilities that could emerge from an unforeseen direction. And I think that's true of us in technology. Things are always coming at us that we hadn't foreseen because they're changing so fast. So my hope in this blog is really to start to look more broadly at the trends in industry and technology beyond the federal government, academia, private industry, nonprofits, what's going on around the globe, and start to analyze its bearing and its relevance on our role as federal IT professionals.
Does blogging provide a worthwhile management tool for you?
I have two blogs. I mentioned the internal one that I use with my own team and the external one. I think that the internal one is more of a management tool in the sense that it's an opportunity to communicate very directly, very immediately, and to start to give people a sense of camaraderie and teamwork. The external one really is more, I hope, an opportunity for me to reflect in a hopefully a thought leadership kind of fashion about trends that are taking place and to be thoughtful about where our industry is going.
Well, Casey, when it comes to government, the demand from the public has been around accountability, transparency, and driving towards results and outcomes. What are you doing in your current role at GSA to do just that?
You know, GSA, more broadly, is a leading supporter in the transparency and participation, collaboration priorities of the Obama administration. We have a leading role in data.gov and the IT dashboard. My office is participating in the sense of helping to make sure the content that GSA has on those sites is relevant, that it's accurate, that it's fresh, and that it's useful. So we are one of the leading internal offices to try and make sure those data sets on data.gov, for example, are accurate, and then we've got the right kind of information, and that we're also being appropriate about what we're posting, because it's not putting everything up. It's about putting information that's suitable and that is going to be helpful in a public context.
What does the future hold for information technology at GSA? We will ask Casey Coleman, Chief Information Officer at the General Services Administration, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. This is The Center This Week, highlighting the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness, brought to you by the IBM Center for the Business of Government. I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The center this week is our opportunity to inform and, most importantly, to invite you, our listeners, to use the IBM Center for the Business of Government as your resource, a how-to resource for improving government effectiveness at the state, local, and federal level. Our focus today is on CIO leadership with my very special guest, Harvey Capel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership. Harvey, welcome.
Thank you, Michael. It's wonderful to be here today.
Harvey, what is the mission of the Center for CIO Leadership, and what are you trying to accomplish?
The center has as its mission to create a global community to advance the CIO profession. And really what we mean by that is to help CIOs to evolve their role, which in many cases is very tactical, very heads down, very operational, largely focused on expense reduction, which is a fine and noble goal, of course. But what we see is a lot of business value, frankly, being left on the table by not being able to leverage IT in more innovative and strategic ways to look at how to use technology to drive top-line revenue, to deliver sustainable business value, to be full peers, business partners, leaders at the enterprise level, driving business well beyond what they most CIOs currently do. So that's really the mission of the Center for CIO Leadership.
So a very timely mission, an important mission. What are the ways you work to achieve that mission? What are some of the things you're doing with the community?
It's a great question. First of all, let me just share with our listeners that the community itself is made up of about 2,700 members. It's a very global community. In fact, the global nature of what we do is a very important aspect. Essentially, we do research, so we're constantly listening to the needs of the CIO community, what their challenges are, what their opportunities may be. We're then helping them to assess where they are in the maturity cycle, if you will, of their own development and their place within the enterprise in order to be able to leverage technology in some of the ways we've talked about. And then, frankly, based on those conversations, based on our understanding of those needs and the gaps, we partner with a series of world-class educators, academic partners, learning partners to deliver education back to the CIOs. I should be clear, education for us is not about necessarily sitting in a classroom. A lot of our education is online. A lot of it is in the form of webinars or online roundtables, as we call them, or in-person salons or conversations just like the one we're having today. Where we find that CIOs get an enormous value from simply interacting with their peers and understanding what someone in their shoes has done before them or how someone has solved a certain problem or overcome a certain challenge.
I really want to get a sense from your perspective. Are there opportunities for increased collaboration and partnership between public and private sector CIO and the community at large?
I mean, I think we have seen great success at the Center for CIO Leadership in terms of connecting both public and private sector CIOs in the same. It used to be you would go to an event and it would be for public sector, or you'd go to an event and it would be for private sector. And more we are both seeing, and we are also initiating ourselves, events that commingle both public and private sector. And it is very clear that learnings can be shared. Opportunities can be shared. And frankly, there's a tremendous amount to be learned in both directions. In the case of public to private, some of these social networking, Web 2.0, collaborative innovation kinds of spaces, I think in many cases, the private sector certainly has many advantages around sort of the project management, some of the administrative aspects, the budgeting aspects, the planning aspects, the execution aspects, where, you know, frankly, there are not legal constraints, as we had discussed a little bit earlier, where I think there's a lot of benefit that can be accrued, as well as talent management and sharing as well, by the way. That's one of the other silver linings in the dark cloud of this economic downturn. Which has been clearly quite tragic for many people that are unfortunately out of work. But on the other hand, the labor pool that is currently available to both the public sector and the private sector is probably better than it's been in 25 years.
Wonderful. Thanks, Harvey.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you.
For the IBM Center for the Business of Government, I'm Michael Keegan, and this has been The Center This Week. The term cloud computing is suddenly everywhere, with government leaders, industry executives, and the press all talking excitedly about this new concept. Moving to the Cloud, An Introduction to Cloud Computing and Government by David Wild, examines both the interest in and the technology surrounding cloud computing, and why it is receiving such increased attention. It tackles such questions as, what is cloud computing? What are some of the top challenges facing government leaders pursuing cloud computing strategies? You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Faced with seemingly intractable issues such as an ever-growing federal deficit, economic uncertainty, unemployment, and an aging infrastructure, it appears that the old adage, doing more with less, has taken on a whole new reality. Addressing the challenges arising from this new reality brings with it opportunities to try different approaches and borrow new strategies. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine, we bring together leaders, innovators, practitioners, and thinkers who offer models to follow, provide insights that can infuse theory to practice, and pave the way to reshaping the business of government. Hear from Dr. Bobby Braun, chief technologist at NASA, about advancing its space technology program. Air Force Surgeon General Bruce Green on how disruptive innovations are saving lives on the battlefield. Dr. David McClure of GSA on how the federal government's trying to become more open, collaborative, and innovative. Richard Spires leading Homeland Security's technology effort. Cass Holloway ensuring the New York City water system is viable for the next 100 years. And Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett on strengthening the U.S. Navy's information dominance for the 21st century. Our forum is dedicated to exploring ways government leaders can cut cost and improve performance. All of this and so much more in the Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Casey Coleman, Chief Information Officer of the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us today from IBM is Ken Beecher. Casey, I talk to all of our guests about collaboration and the use of partnerships. How are you leveraging partnerships to improve IT outcomes at GSA?
We are looking both internally and externally. Internally, we're partnering in particular with Dave McClure and Sunny Bagwalia in the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies. Some of the work they're doing in developing government-wide platforms really is going to be beneficial for us and able to be, a customer of those services. So one of the things they're developing is FedSpace, which is a social media collaboration platform for the entire federal government, offering the ability to collaborate across agencies. And we look at that as an opportunity both to practice those collaborative approaches and also to be able to share and learn from other agencies. So that's one example of a partnership that I think is more based around technologies and platforms. Also leverage partnerships from the other CIOs in the CIO Council. And everyone is going through very similar types of challenges. And there's, if nothing else, there's a therapeutic effect just from understanding that we're all in the same sort of shared challenges. But also learning from where others have made progress has been very beneficial.
Do you see partnerships driving innovation in your area?
I think that's a good question because I believe innovation sometimes happens in unexpected places, not necessarily out of the work of a partnership, but maybe the insights of a individual or a small group who's working and building on the work others have done. So I think if you think about a partnership as something occurring over time and maybe in a somewhat disconnected fashion, but still people learning from each other and building one upon the other, yeah, definitely.
Given the critical role information technology plays in mission and program delivery, could you give us your view of how the role of CIO has evolved? And what are some of the characteristics, the key characteristics of a successful CIO?
I can only speak for what I know most directly, and that is at GSA. But what I've observed in my time there is there's really much more of a sense of partnership, to use your word, about the role technology can play, and more of a sense of trust and of a sense of we're in this together, rather than there being, you know, I'm the mission organization, I'm going to tell you what I need, and then I'm going to expect you to turn around and produce that widget. That really is an old type of thinking that I think is really part of our past. It really is a sense that IT has to be involved from the very beginning in all the discussions, in all the planning, in all the strategic conversations, because if that hasn't been included from the beginning, you're going to have a suboptimal outcome. So I view it as much more of a peer kind of relationship than it had been in the past, and really much more of a recognition of IT as being able to have a very positive impact. You know, in years past, we struggled to deliver in the client-server era, you know, really complex, risky deployments that were often delivered late and over budget. We're now in a world of consumer IT, cloud services. The CIO is moving away from being the owner and operator of systems, purchasing the licenses, owning the servers, running the network. We're becoming more the choreographers or the conductors of a multitude of services that are being delivered from a multitude of places. And our role is to choreograph those in a way that meets the end user's needs and balances security and cost and effectiveness. And I think it's a wonderful challenge. It's a lot of fun. I think it's a much more substantial and interesting role than it would have been in years past.
You know, we've talked a lot about technology challenges and innovation. So not to embarrass you, or maybe just a little bit, congratulations as a recipient of the MIT Sloan CIO Symposium 2010 Award for Leadership and Innovation. For our listeners, this award recognizes CIOs for their ability to foster a culture of innovation while delivering best-in-class IT services to support the organizational mission. You know, given your experience and this recognition, what emerging technologies hold the most promise for improving federal services?
I'm particularly interested in those technologies that will make us more mobile and secure. And that's partly because mobility and security are a big part of our strategy at this point. So desktop virtualization is really interesting. I think it offers a way to get to the point of having any device on the network, being able to get to your critical business information and tools from any place, any time. I'm also interested in new endpoint devices, tablets, netbooks, ebook readers, flip video cameras, ubiquitous video teleconferencing on the go. Those kind of capabilities really are more available in the consumer world. But when we start to bring those into the corporate environment in a way that's supportable, I think we're going to have a much richer, much more productive, much more 21st century end user experience.
So what are the challenges of bringing this future technology to your office or to GSA?
Long list. Security is a big one, of course. Supportability as well. Some of these new devices, because they're consumer devices, they really don't have an enterprise support arrangement. There's really not a way to enforce things like passwords and enforce encryption and enforce two-factor authentication. So the goal is to be able to work with industry and develop and push for those kind of enterprise solutions that give us the ability to manage these devices and yet still make them available in a way that the end users are demanding.
Well, we are at the end of our conversation, but I want to ask you, what advice would you give someone who's interested in a career in public service?
I think a diversity of experience is important. I think any kind of public sector experience is well balanced by private sector experience. There's a lot of partnership opportunities. The Industry Advisory Council has the Voyagers program and the Partners program that allow participants from industry and government to work together in a year-long journey to learn from one another's worlds and start to be able to appreciate the partnership and the roles that each play. I think it's also, if you're considering a role in public service, it's nice to be able to appreciate and be motivated by the nature of public service, because those of us who are in it know that it has a multitude of rewards, but it has challenges too. There's a great many stakeholders. You're always trying to bring people together in coalitions and persuade people on a course of action. So I think negotiating skills are a must. And I would say that public service is very, very rewarding. I would encourage anyone thinking about it to consider it seriously.
That's terrific advice. I want to thank you for joining us today, but more importantly, Ken and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure. It really is. I would just like to say that if you're interested in reading the blog that we mentioned, Around the Corner, you can find it at innovation.gsa.gov.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Casey Coleman, Chief Information Officer of the U.S. General Services Administration. My co-host from IBM has been Ken Beecher. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Postal Service doing to reduce its carbon footprint? What is the U.S. Navy doing to strengthen its information dominance? And how are federal agencies becoming more transparent and open? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Tune into the Business of Government magazine next week and find out.